So last week, Zach and I gave a talk about the different perspectives of integrating challenges of integrating spiritual practice into our day-to-day lives, and I thought I'd develop on that with a few questions that I think are very important for people to be asking as they are on their spiritual path, whether you're at the very beginning or whether you're decades into your practice. There's some questions that continually arise, and I've broken them down into about three basic questions. The first is, how do I integrate spiritual practice itself into all the other responsibilities that I have? We all have very busy lives with a lot of things that we do to both try to stay self-sufficient and happy, fulfilled. Everything from exercise to work to friendships to relationships to families, responsibilities and obligations. So we're already, to use a metaphor that I like from one of the monks I've studied with, Ajahn Chah, we have a lot of balls that we're juggling. And it's very tempting for spiritual practice to become just another ball. So instead of having six balls, we now have seven. And when we treat it that way, obviously, there's a greater chance that we're going to drop one of the balls in our lives. And very often, the ball that we drop is, of course, the newest one, the spiritual practice. And so we see that it works, the meditation works, but when there's an emergency at work or a crisis with a friend or a challenge with a family member or roommate or a relationship, very often the thing we've added last is the first to go. Or spiritual practice, which has wonderful results, but they take a while to manifest, we tend to drop. And then there are other people who do the exact opposite, that they so fiercely are so enthusiastic about spiritual practice that there's a tendency to make the spiritual ball be the ball, and all the other balls just fall to the wayside, or at least the difficult ones, like making a living, you know, paying the bills, maintaining core relationships. You know, these things fall to the wayside, and we're making just sure. Oh yeah, my spiritual ball. It's, look at the beautiful arc in my life. Look how nice it is. So that's not really a desired result either, because both results, whether it's just another ball and we're then feeling guilty when we're not meditating and or we're not practicing mindfulness or we're getting angry and then it becomes a source of stress. And the one thing it's supposed to be doing is relieving stress in our lives, but instead it's creating it if we treat it as just another thing to juggle. But if it becomes the most important ball that we're juggling, then it creates another form of suffering, which is the other things in our life we don't give attention to. And so how do we relate to spiritual practice? And so the second question is, there's a lot of different forms of the Dharma, Buddhist practice out there, meditation practice, spirituality. There's so much available, and the question becomes, should I practice it cafeteria style, where I go to different Buddhist and yogic communities and sit with shamans and goddesses or whatever, and try to, you know, just take everything I like and smush it all into a spiritual cookie that tastes really delicious? Or should I immediately try to find one path and immediately, you know, delve into that and, you know, everything else sucks. My Buddhism, I'm a Theravadin, that's the answer to it all. So how do we relate to this question, and then how do we translate the Dharma into our lives? You know, there's a tendency to want Buddhist practice to be just an 11th step in our 12-step program, if we're sober, or there's a desire for spirituality to be part of our therapy, and we want there to be a nice continuousness between therapy and our practice, or it can be a desire to have it be part of our engaged political practice. We may be a Trotskyist or an anarcho-syndicalist. Not that any of you know what that is. Maybe some of you do. But so, and we may be searching through the Dharma to try to have it justify our way of the world. And I'm a Trotskyist, and the Buddha said this, and that proves that Trotsky was right. So how much should we feel comfortable, you know, translating and playing with the Dharma in our lives? The last question is the community itself. How do we relate to all these other people? You know, how much should I be involved? What's the point of all these other people sitting around me? And some of them look cute. Can I date them? Is this an alternative to J-date? Is this B-date here? So I'll try to delve into all these, because that's my job here, to talk about anything that pops into this mind of mine. So let's start with the first question, which is integrating spiritual practice into our life. And what I do like is the answer that spirituality is not another ball that we're juggling, nor is it the most important ball. I use the analogy that Tanisiro Bhikkhu uses, which is that it's the ground that we stand on that allows us to juggle all the other balls, which means there shouldn't be this this sense that now I'm doing my spiritual practice and now I'm going to be doing my work and now I'm going to be doing my romantic life and now I'm going to be... The core tenets of spiritual practice are something that we can seamlessly be bringing into every part of our lives to make our lives easier, not more complicated, so that there are fewer balls in the air. It's not another stressful thing. It's not another obligation. It's actually the way we live so that we can manage all the other stuff. It's the ground or the chair that we sit in that allows us to juggle. So what are these practices or tools that we can use throughout the rest of our life, the ground that we can stand on? The first is to have mindful awareness of what's going on in the body. This is something that we lose track of so often in our stressful lives when we're so externally focused and we're caught up in all the unresolved issues and how people are relating to us and whether they like us or not and how is this project going and all the stresses that we have to keep track of. There's a tendency to completely lose all awareness of the breath and the body and to lose this amazing reservoir of both, it's a refuge from the stresses of life, but it's also a source of wisdom. which is when you learn how to read your body, you can see when when we're taking on too much, when we're too caught up, when we're being too sucked in by dramas. We can also begin to feel states of unease, of vedana, that let us know that something's often wrong. There's so much wisdom and so much indications that we're carrying around that we don't use. And so mindfulness is a tool to both relax the mind, to check in with what our stress levels are, to bring us to a place of feeling safe and balanced. This is always present. And if we can learn how to integrate checking in with the body during the rest of our daily lives, during business, during relationships, during phone calls with parents or interactions with roommates, if we have this inner awareness where we're not just sucked into the drama, but we're also have a little bit pulled back, which the Buddha called detachment. And this part that we're pulling back is going into awareness of the body and the breath. This is something that we can bring everywhere. And it's not another ball that we're juggling. It's actually something that allows us to show up for all the other things in life. Another practice is compassion, which is part of our spiritual practice is we do not beat ourselves up into skillfulness. We do it by realizing that when we make mistakes or when we act unskillfully, it's because of suffering and stress, dukkha. And the goal is to reduce stress and to realize that we all deserve happiness. We all deserve peace. So rather than ever starting with a sense of, oh, I'm not living up to my shoulds, I need these shoulds, I should be further along, I should have every single thing in my life taken care of, I should have a better career, I should be in a relationship, I should have had my first novel published. That's not the way we engage anymore when we have spiritual practice. Instead, we start to focus on reflecting positively on the efforts that we've put in. So even if the book isn't published, we feel good about the fact that we turned on Microsoft Word and we changed a paragraph or a comma. Or we feel good that maybe we didn't exercise for half an hour, but maybe we did walk a little bit more today or whatever. It's a reflecting on the positive, skillful things that we do and the motivating ourselves through being compassionate and kind with ourselves that we bring through all of our lives. So this, again, is another ground or another seat that we're sitting on. It's not another thing to balance. It's a practice that lets us keep track and deal with all the other things in our lives. Another practice is the desire to stay present rather than allow the mind to slip into all these things that may or may not happen in the future, the fears of what may happen if we lose a project or if we don't get this or if we, you know, whatever possibilities. We don't keep track of what ifs. We don't focus the mind on all the things that are unaccomplished or the slights of the past. It's a practice of keep returning to the present, because generally in the present, there's not a lot of fucking shit going on, honestly. You know, all the drama that we bring into life is stuff that hasn't actually really happened. As Mark Twain said, all the worst things that happened in my life never actually occurred. They're just, you know. So we bring this desire to keep the mind focused and present. And lastly, the fourth practice we bring in to all of life is the recognition that if we want to be happier, instead of focusing on all the unskillful shit that people around us do, focus on how we can make ourselves more peaceful by inching towards more skillful behavior. When something goes wrong in a relationship or a project at work, instead of looking to pass the blame, which will happen naturally, the mind will do that anyway, so you don't have to work on it, but to take a moment at least to ask ourselves, what could I do differently so that this is less likely to occur in the future? This practice is not about apportioning blame or beating up on ourselves. It's actually a very compassionate approach, because what we're doing is we're basically recognizing that the only thing that we can really change is our own behavior. We can't change the behavior of our coworkers, the people we live with, the people in our family. They'll do what they want. But I can change how I focus my mind, how much effort I put in, how much I let go and allow other people in. All these things I can control. So when something goes awry, rather than beating up on ourselves, we simply see, well, okay, what could I have done differently? And that's it. The Buddha said there's no more to, when he was teaching his son Rahula, he said, when you see you've made a mistake, acknowledge it. If you can find this wise spiritual person, you can acknowledge it to them, and then you just make a determination, okay, this didn't work, I'm going to try something else the next time. So those are the four tools that we carry around that can allow us, and when I said this, the second tool of being compassionate, that should include harmlessness, not causing harm. So, but these tools allow us to be present in our lives and allow us to have greater ease in juggling all the stuff we have to keep track of. Now, the second question was the issue of what kind of Buddhism and how much should we translate it. In my experience, when you're starting out on the spiritual practice, it's a really, really good idea to find and go to as many different sanghas and Buddhist communities as you can, to expose yourself, and not only Buddhist, but to as many different spiritual communities as you can. Keep your mind open. Do not just go to listen to one teacher. Listen to as many as you can. When I was starting out, there wasn't an internet where you could simply go and, you know, oh, I heard, you know, this guy, Noah Levine. What's this all about? You'd have to imagine what they look like, and then you'd go, you know, after hearing maybe their talks on cassette, you'd go and you'd see them, and oh my God, they're 30 years older and weirder looking than I ever imagined, you know, or whatever. You know, sometimes they'd even be in entirely different traditions than you thought. And then now, you know, you hear somebody, you can immediately go online, see their picture, the smiling, beatific, you know, Dharma teacher photo, which is sort of like a yoga teacher photo. I've never had stress in my life. And so I was using this analogy. It's a little bit like when I was like a kid, and bands would come out, you'd have no idea what they looked like at all. Somebody would say, here's a tape of Black Sabbath. And you'd be like, oh yeah. And you listen to that, you know, no idea what Ozzy Osbourne looked like at all. I mean, you see one image of him on a, but it was like his hair was down. You had no idea. Now, the moment somebody says, hey, check out this band, you go on YouTube immediately and you can see them, you know, waking up in the morning and having their coffee. There's no mystery anymore. So use the fact that you have all this available to you. Go in there, see, check out. But then there's a time to really after a while, finds a path that resonates deeply, that seamlessly, you know, you seem to have a facility with to use in your life, that doesn't feel completely like this, that you're able to begin to grasp and then really delve into it. You know, see if you can look into some of the writings and some of the original teachings and find a teacher and a tradition that you like and really, really go into it. And the reason for this is if we play cafeteria spirituality for too long, we begin to just choose the stuff that's easy. You know, like, oh, I like this idea that there's a Buddha within. That sounds good. And I like the kindness. Yeah, that's really nice. And for dessert, I'd like a little bit of the everybody deserves love. And that's, and that's my spiritual practice. That's wonderful. It's great. And then, you know, something shitty happens and somebody, you know, cuts you off and gives you the finger and you're like, where's the love? You know? This is not what it's all about. And what we need is a practice that has really in depth covered what to do when life is difficult, when there's loss, when there's rejection, when there's suffering. And you only get to that, and you only get to a path that's really integrates really well. By which I mean there's no contradictory teachings if you follow one path. The tendency when people begin to spend all their time picking between this and that is they pick a lot of teachings that don't actually gel. If you pick one teaching that says, oh, there's a Buddha nature within, but then another teaching that says you have to cultivate all the wisdom and compassion, these are not gelling. So you need to find the path that makes sense to you. In terms of translating it into life, all that I would ask is that you have an understanding of what the core principles are, which are always harmlessness and are always the precepts of not engaging in causing harm through killing, stealing, lying, sex that causes harm and intoxication, that we have a fundamental, at least, arena where we're going to keep a sense of what is spiritual behavior and what is not, and what is spiritual type thinking and what is not. If we're using our dharma to justify hatred, whether it's political hatred or anger towards somebody in our lives, we're not using the dharma. We're twisting it beyond any shape or form that's recognizable. So, but then part of getting excited also about your spiritual life is talking about it, shooting the shit. I was, and still am, pretty much a dharma nerd. I love talking the dharma and writing about it. So it's really good to find people and get excited. So finally, the community. The Buddha said that spending all our time with people who are not spiritual is really, really tiring. That when you're around people who are constantly looking for their happiness in their careers or in beauty that will fade or in accumulating money or accumulating objects, that this is very tiring. It's in the shorter discourses that he goes into some wonderful teachings about how tiring it is to be around unskillful, belavaga is one of the words he used, people who are just constantly looking in stressful directions for peace and for a purpose in life, a sense of why we're alive. And he said that when we go to be around spiritual people, practitioners, that it actually can be just being around other people who are trying to find meaning in a different way can be relaxing. Because we're not competing anymore. We're not around people who are going to judge us for what clothes we're wearing or what, how much money we make or what our jobs are. It's perfectly okay to be completely unemployed or whatever it is you do. It doesn't matter because that's not what, nobody will take that as a demarker of who you are when you're in a spiritual community. So it's very liberating to be around other people. It's easier to meditate when you're with a spiritual community. When you're around other people, it's easier to close your eyes. Because part of the body, when you close your eyes and there's nobody around, it's like, oh shit, I'm alone when I got my eyes closed. It's crazy. There could be a fucking bear, you know? So when there's a lot of other people and there's G, you're like, okay, that guy's over there. Nothing's going to happen to me. I'm safe. So anyway, it's easier to meditate. In Eastern Buddhist countries, a lot of the sanghas, and sangha means a community of renunciates. Kalyanamita is a group of friends who are spiritual. And so I would tend to call us a Buddhist community. In a lot of Thailand, the sanghas are very small, and so it tends to be run by a monk who's an abbot or an ajahn who's been instructed in the proper way, the vinaya, the way that an association of monks should live. It's not a very extremely democratic way of doing things. And when it came to the West, and we started out with much larger, which is not to say that every spiritual community in the East is run that way, but when it came to the West, we have a lot of different models. We have large spiritual centers which have all these different style meetings, LGBT meetings and meetings for young practitioners and for people of color and for people who are in 12-step groups. And you can have centers that have many, many different teachers, and there can be steering committees. And then there are other Buddhist groups that are run very much like 12-step meetings, where, with the endless business meetings, with does anybody have a motion? I move that. I don't like that poster on the wall over there. And where's the flowers that we used to plant? And if you ever sat through one, you just want to hang yourself. But when I started teaching here at 2005, it wasn't really clear what model to use, and so at first I tried to integrate it much more like the 12-step model with having a lot of meetings. And that's great for 12-step groups, but actually what it wound up bringing out was a lot of cliquishness and animosity between groups that wanted one thing and groups that wanted... There was people who really wanted... a lot of the teaching and a lot of the groups to always be about engaged political activity, and others that didn't want any of that. And so at the end, what I wound up settling with was a slightly more model based on the East, which is I have a group of people that I ask, you know, and I listen to what they think, you know, what subjects they think need to be addressed. You know, people write me and make suggestions in terms of anything involving the sangha, and I try to incorporate every single one that makes sense. And so I ask that if you have any desire to do any service, definitely let me know. And because there's always room to expand the Dharma pumps into different arenas. Finally, yes, the whole issue of the dating stuff. Luckily for me, I all the issues of money and sex for me were resolved. I'm happily in a relationship, and I don't take money for teaching, so I don't personally have any of those issues. And I firmly believe that a Buddhist center, that the students should be very safe from the teacher. And there's a lot of communities that have completely fallen apart because the teacher has decided that it's okay to sleep with the people who come in. So I know it's on all of your minds, but it's not okay to sleep with them. Kathy will be happy to hear that as well.
Not all on mine.
Yeah. So you might see somebody here that's attractive, and the goal is that while we've had many, many wonderful couples that have met here, while people are seated and you're in Dharma Punks, while you're literally, we're in the class, or, you know, I ask it to be a safe space, and that you don't use it as a place to try to hook up with somebody else. If the class is over and you're out, you know, or it's like, you know, you're no longer there's no longer any spiritual thing going on, and you're outside and you see somebody that's cute and they walk up to you, and it's very clear that you're not trying to just like use your common sense, but really try to make this the safest place imaginable. This is a place where people go not to complicate their lives, but to find a refuge for peace. So I ask that always be foremost in the way we approach the Sangha. Definitely remember that while you're here, you have a resource of what the Buddha called in his... I was just looking at the sutta keeping company with the wise. He said that we are always looking for people that are unconditionally available, which there always will be people available here. So it might not be the people you want, but there always will be somebody with an ear. People who give, who are helpful, who are sympathetic, which means they'll listen and they'll empathize, and they'll, when asked, give good counsel. So you have that available in your life. You're not alone. You can use the community for that as a resource. So that's it. I hope I addressed those topics. And now I'm going to turn this off and turn it over to questions and to shares on anything related to any spiritual topic. So thank you for coming.